Welcome to today's South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations conference call. Participation in this call is by express invitation of SDAHO only. Unauthorized participants and or any party that aids and abets such unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law. Please disconnect from the call if SDAHO did not expressly invite your participation. A question and answer session will follow the presentation, and instructions for asking questions will be given at that time. Thank you all for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Deborah Owen.
Thank you and good afternoon, everyone. You know, there's always this modern of marvel tech, a miracle of technology, and yet here we are. So thank you for hanging in. For those of you who stayed with the call, it looks like we are up and running. I just want to let you know, and maybe it's just because we have lost our lucky charm, Scott, who is actually in Philip working hard today. So you just got me in terms of the federal and state updates. But it's a great time to talk about both state and federal, so let's just get right to it if we could. On the federal side, we'll talk a little bit about the calendar and some of the issues, some of which have been in the media recently. So the House and Senate are in session through Thursday this week, with the Senate in session only on Friday. However, the House will recess today at 5:30 and then go back in at 8:30 for Trump's joint session with the House and Senate. The House and Senate are also in session all of next week, 7th through the 10th, and actually for most of March. But in April, they will be out for a couple of weeks in terms of their session, being in session during April as well. And that will be just for their Easter recess. The last week of April is when the continuing budget resolution is up. And so the Senate will need to work that last week of April on their appropriations work to be adopted in May. And also remember that in April there is the confirmation of the Supreme Court justice and confirmation. So that leaves about between the Easter break, the budget resolution discussion, and the confirmation of the Supreme Court justice leaves most of the time they have to work on the ACA replace and repeal is in March. The House, of course, first must vote to repeal prior to the Senate considering that. And so the House really has to get their work done over the next 3 weeks so they can get that legislation over to the Senate, because May will be a time really for tax reform and then that new budget resolution. In terms of what's going on with issues, it's the governor's conference in D.C. this week. Our Governor Dugard has been there, I think, early as of last Thursday and has continued to meet with folks in terms of all of our interests there on our behalf. Trump has spoke with the governors and said his administration will put forward its own Obamacare replacement plan within the next few weeks, and that does kind of coincide with the House and Senate calendar as well. The State of the Union, tonight, the president will address the joint session of Congress and lay out his vision for tax reform and the repeal and replace for the ACA. Although just a note, many of us, of course, with our colleagues within SDAHO, kind of chuckled about Trump's recent statements about the unbelievably complex subject of health care and that he did not know it was so complex. And, of course, we all sort of chuckled because we do know it is exactly that. For the House, the repeal and replace and repair plan, the crux of their plan is that it won't cover as many as the ACA does now, but it will make the market more stable, the insurance market more stable, for those who do have coverage. The House needs to mark up their bill, and it could be as early as next week, but they have not actually made a decision formally on when they will do that. Last week, as you know, there was that draft leak of the House plan. And there's been some information of that from the ACA, so I just want to go over that briefly and remind you, if you want more details, please check on your ACA email boxes of last week. There were some coverage incentives in that draft product from the House. The bill would reduce the individual and employer coverage mandate penalties to zero beginning in 2016 and instead would begin in 2019. They would use those penalties for failure to maintain coverage as the incentive to enroll in coverage. Insurers would assess a penalty on any individual who experienced 63 or more continuous days without coverage during a 12-month look-back period. The penalty would be 30% of the monthly price of the health plan premium and would be assessed on all monthly premium payments made during the coverage year or the remainder of the year for partial year enrollees. In terms of Medicaid, until December 31st of 2019, states may receive enhanced FMAP for expansion adults. It appears that additional states may expand during the interim and receive the enhanced FMAP. After December 31st, 2019, states would no longer receive the enhanced FMAP except with respect to expansion adults who were enrolled in coverage as of December 31st, 2019, and do not have a break in eligibility for more than 1 month after the cutoff date. After December 31st, though, of 2019, states may elect to cover expansion adults at their standard rate. Starting in fiscal year FY 2019, states would be subject to an aggregate medical assistance expenditure cap. The cap would be based on each state's average spending in FY 2016 in five different categories trended forward by Medi-Cal Consumer Price Index, plus 1 percentage point multiplier for the number of enrollees. In addition, there would have been $100 billion available in state innovation grants. And remember, this is really to implement high-risk pools, establish premium stabilization programs, and make payments to providers and assist individuals with premiums and cost sharing, among other potential uses. This is really also meant to be driving down the cost of insurance in terms of those grants. The marketplace stabilization, the bill would take several steps to stabilize the health insurance markets in 2018, including increasing the permissible age rating bands from 3 to 1, giving states the authority to select and arrange for their state. And then I want to switch back then in terms of those details and that back to that draft plan. The governor's meeting had met and discussed some of that House plan during the time with the governors. And the House is really trying to walk back part of their plan a bit, but note that the final product will be very similar to the draft we see in terms of how that will look. The Republicans in the House are running into some problems. There are those two conservative caucuses, one's the Freedom Caucus. If they don't like this draft plan, and if they don't have those two conservative caucuses on board, the Republicans are going to have a hard time passing their draft in the House side. And the reason why is because the problem is that those two conservative groups want a true repeal, which the Republicans in the House do not have in their plan now. On the Senate side, there is some talk of some senators, perhaps as many as three, breaking rank and will not vote to repeal the House plan if it comes to the Senate, which, of course, that kind of jams up the Senate in terms of their reconciliation plan. And so now I want to switch over to kind of what's working right now for in terms of what we've been doing on the federal side with our partners with AHA. There's a real encouragement for us to stay on message, that message discipline, and that we must maintain coverage for all individuals currently receiving benefits. That message is working so far. We've met some pushback, and it has helped. We believe that it has helped our messaging is to make sure that we have those all individuals are currently receiving coverage. That is working in terms of with our senators and our representatives. The president also met with health insurers yesterday to encourage them towards his plan. But also tonight, watch for immigration messaging on world work visas, and we'll see what the president has moving forward with that message. And then I want to move on to the state side. We'll talk about the calendar a little bit. Today is legislative day 30. There are 7 days left of the main run, which ends on March 10th, next Friday. Again, veto day is March 27th, but note there are no vetoes that the governor has signed over at this time. Although the number of hog houses, and we've talked about in the last couple of weeks, those are where they basically strip a bill of its entire language and make it a new bill, but it has passed the deadline for new bills. There are 28 of those. Other than one that we're working on, which is Senate Bill 147, we haven't had anything hostile toward our members so far with hog houses. The Public Policy Council, though, of the bills that they've reviewed, which is over 40, 19 of those have been tabled, withdrawn, or sent to the 41st day. And being sent to the 41st day in South Dakota is just a very nice way of killing your bill because it allows for debate, essentially, because there is no 41st day. Constitution does, has limits the legislature to meet for 40 days. 16 of those bills that we have taken a position on are on the governor's desk or signed by the governor, and we have 9 still in play, which 2 of those are budget bills, the FY 17 and FY 18. So I want to talk a little bit about a bill that we have been advocating for. This is the lay midwifery bill, and if I could just in brief, this seems to be kind of the year of the nurses. There has been some pushback between nurses and docs. Senate Bill 61 certainly was a fight that we didn't enter into. We were neutral because our members employ both docs and nurses. But the nurses prevailed on 61. And I got to say with midwifery as well, some of those key advocates on Senate Bill 61 and certainly the prime sponsor, Senator Spolholt, also changed her vote and really advocated for on the floor of the Senate for midwifery. That was Senate Bill 136. So it raced through the Senate with breakneck speed, and this morning we heard it at House Health. It went through the House Health at 9-3. It passed. We had made some efforts to try to amend the bill to put in some low-risk identifiers so that mothers who are we consider high-risk would be exempted out of being able to have a home birth with a non-nurse midwife. And that failed, although we had a respectable vote of 5-7 on that. But the bill did pass without amendment this morning. Those who were on our side, you should note, were York, Representative York, Rounds, and Konzett. Konzett was a great advocate for, so those of you out in Rapid, please give her a shout out. They were great. They understood the importance of saving lives of the unborn and that these non-medically trained ladies who mean well don't have the understanding and ability to assess when a mother's life is in danger. We actually, on our side, we did bring in a mother from Nevada who had lost her baby, who had hired a certified professional midwife. That will be, if this bill passes the House floor, that will be the new term for a lay midwife, as a certified professional midwife. Please note, it is very close to a certified nurse midwife. And if that makes you confused, imagine how the general public will think about this. Anyway, this mom who had lost her first baby to a certified professional midwife's miscalculation in terms of when to get her to the hospital, her body was out of fluid for the baby. They ended up eventually getting her to the hospital, but it was the certified professional midwife, that non-nurse midwife, who made the judgment to not have that mom go in. Ultimately, that baby was born alive in the hospital but crashed shortly thereafter. The mother shared her story about hiring what she thought was a healthcare professional who would help her, and it seemed like everything was going well, but ultimately this trained, professional, non-nurse midwife didn't make the right judgments, and it cost their baby their life. She's an outspoken person on Facebook, and she has a video out there as well. But even her testimony didn't persuade this group of far-right conservatives to protect the life of the unborn. And so that'll be on the House floor. We'll continue to fight that. We have known for some time that this may be the year of the midwife. But we have grave concerns about the looseness of the language and certainly of the low risk not being identified properly in law. Tomorrow we'll have a bill on the immunity bill. It's House Bill 1082. It's an act to grant limited immunity from arrest and prosecution for certain related offenses to persons who assist persons in need of emergency assistance or who are themselves in need of emergency assistance. What this means is that if there's somebody who has an OD at a party and someone wants to stay behind who may also have ingested or done some of those illegal drugs, that they would have immunity. We'll have that hearing tomorrow at 7:45, and we are supporting that bill in terms of life. And then last, I want to share a little bit about, it's the Senate Concurrent Resolution 15. It's expressing a lack of confidence in our refugee settlement program. The prime sponsors are Neil Tapio from Watertown and Drew Dennert of Aberdeen. So if those folks are in your neck of the woods, you may want to reach out to them. I know the Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce president is Kapaska, has reached out through those members to encourage folks to not vote in favor of this refugee settlement. It is more of the issues we've seen on a national level. There is a refugee settlement program. It's a program granted to LSS, and it's been around in South Dakota for many years. We utilize those folks in our healthcare industry. I think at Avera McKennan Hospital, they work closely with LSS to match our own personal needs, their personal needs at the Avera with those refugee capabilities and help those folks to fill many positions that they have at open. It has been a great success for Avera, and I know for many other employers in Sioux Falls. And so we're just concerned about this. It kind of goes back to the fear of having those folks on our shores. So we're hoping that that will die tomorrow. We hear that it will, but we will be testifying on behalf of that one to vote no for it. Lastly, and probably the most important, are ahead of us are our budget issues. Senate Bill 32, which would hopefully be adopted this Thursday, we believe that's their deadline, unless they, of course, it's always as good. The rules are only as good as a two-thirds vote, so they can always change it with a two-thirds vote. But that would be for FY17. That's about $25 million that needs to be found in that budget because of revenue shortfalls. And then next week will be the adoption of Senate Bill 175, and that is for the Senate. That's for FY18, and that may even be more difficult in terms of provider cuts. We've had a number of you folks reach out to your appropriators in your district to ask them to not cut the 1% for providers and those targeted rate adjustments for community providers and long-term care folks. We have heard so far that they will probably cut the 1% but not actually cut further. So that 1% projected inflationary increase, and I use the word inflationary loosely there, would be cut but not anything further. We hope that is the case. We are continuing to communicate with our appropriators about the need to not cut those services. Our dollars, unlike the state employees and unlike the teacher salaries, which are those three legs of the stool that they like to do together, our dollars are matched with federal dollars. So ours are similar to, in my mind, similar to those highway funds. When you cut a dollar on our side, you're cutting two on the federal side. So anyway, that's all I have to report today, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. At this time, we will begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, press 0 followed by a 1 on your touch-tone phone. Questions will be answered in the order they are received. If you have a question, press 0 followed by a 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Please hold for a moment as our system compiles your responses. Again, as a reminder to our audience, you may ask a question by pressing 01 now. And our first question comes from Nick. Please go ahead, Nick.
Say you mentioned the midwifery bill is going over to the House and that this is the year for nurses. What's the likelihood of traction on that end from what you're hearing?
Thank you for the question, Nick. We actually think it's likely going to pass the House. They need a two-thirds vote to get it through because there are fees in the bill. But I can tell you we've had nurses in committee this morning. One was from Brookings Hospital and others that have testified in a way to make it appear that doctors are less experienced and don't know as much as these certified professional, if you will, non-nurse midwives, to the point where Representative Condit actually stated that she felt like they were shaming her. I mean, she's a member of the committee, but she felt like those testifying were shaming her that she chose to have a doctor birth her baby as opposed to a formally medically trained midwife. So there just seems to be the nurses, not all of them, but we had, you know, nurses, one of the nurses from Brookings, and I talked to her afterwards, and one of her statements was she had been a part of 5,000 births in her career, but she never really understood how amazing it could be until she went to her first home birth to watch her daughter, who had a non-medically trained midwife deliver the baby. I mean, they're astonishing things that we're hearing. Obviously, we all know the importance of having a medically trained person in the room when things go wrong. When I talked to this nurse later, she said that she would not have her babies outside of a hospital, but the only testimony that this nurse who practices in South Dakota, she said that basically that is the better way. It is better to have it out of hospital without a doctor. So it's just a weird place, and it's not all nurses, but there are nurses advocating on behalf of this bill. So it's been disappointing.
Again, as a reminder to our audience, you may ask a question by pressing 01 now. And our next question comes from Jay. Please go ahead, Jay.
Okay. This is Jay, and I used to work with Deb. I'm trying to get in her head here, and I can't do it. Why would any idea why she would abandon the nursing profession and jump ship and vote for the midwifery bill?
You know, I don't know. I know Deb, Senator Solholt, and I talked before that vote. You know, we had really wanted to have I know that the other side would like to have the rules, administrative rules in South Dakota, that is a lighter term of law as opposed to a statutory law. We wanted to have those clear situations where it would be high risk, and we're taking those from the midwifery sites, the websites, as well as the OBGYN sites. We had that in definition. Senator Solholt wouldn't even sponsor the bill for us to get it into committee. I couldn't answer for her beliefs. I can tell you in the committee, though, she voted no to pass the bill, but when it was on the Senate floor, she voted yes for midwifery, but she also advocated publicly for that bill, which was a disappointment for us. We had hoped to defeat it there. We only needed 4 votes. We lost a few because she is a strong leader in the Senate, and she advocated very well in terms of it was time to pass this bill and to get it in law. So,
well, we all hope for defeat, but I want you to know, Deb, at least from my point of view, you have fought the good battle, the long battle, the hard battle, and please don't beat yourself up on this one.
Ah, thank you. I don't like losing. So it was a disappointment, especially when we had a mother who had trusted a certified professional midwife on the line talking today in a state where that is legal. And her story is tragic. I mean, it is so sad. And I was so thankful that this young mother would call in. But we just couldn't persuade the committee that having medically trained people perform births, whether it's in-home, we actually advocate for a certified nurse midwife. We believe they're the answer, but that is not how the committee felt about it. So thank you for your kind words.
And it appears there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you all for calling in today, and hopefully we'll have our issues that we had with technology ironed out for the next call on Tuesday of next week, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may now disconnect.